Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everyone, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, but not your grandfather's Star Wars podcast. We're just a little bit different over here, as we like to say, talking about the esoteric nature of the saga, of the wars, and with me, well, I mean, I can't do this without my other master. I would say my master. Because he trained me. It's John Mills.
Yes, thank you, Matthew. And, of course, I couldn't imagine having a fruitful Star Wars discussion without you in my corner. But I think that today, you mentioned a question. Well, not a question. I think this stems from our last episode. Where
it's hard to tell at this point, John, because we're so continuing on the conversation, we just keep coming up with new ideas as we're talking.
Yeah, and this all stemmed from a listener bringing up that we should discuss the Jedi. And so, you know what? I'll go ahead. I'm going to cede the floor for these negotiations, and I want you to put the thought out there for everybody.
The thought was this. You know, we've been talking a lot about the Jedi and in different ways, and one of the things we kind of started talking about a little bit last week, and we decided, you know what, let's just make that a whole show, was this idea of force powers. And, you know, one of the coolest things about Star Wars has been the ways in which different Jedi have different powers. And they they don't all have the same powers. And I mean, Mace Windu is famous for Shatterpoint. You know, Qorn Horn is famous in the EU for not being able to do telekinesis. We watch Ezra Bridger on Rebels, and he has a wonderful way of connecting with living beings, you know, animals and things like that. So all of these things in which the Force manifests itself, and I think really brings to light Yoda's proclamation that the Force is in all living things. It's everywhere.
Right.
And the way that manifests through different Jedi, I think that's so cool.
It is. And it's what's interesting is I'm glad we're having this conversation, because there was actually a bone of contention when Force Awakens came out, where people were bothered because Kylo Ren manifested a power on screen that people had not seen before. And it actually became a bone of contention where people said, oh, well, we never saw the Jedi do this before. Because I imagine just about everybody on the planet has seen The Force Awakens, but Kylo Ren's ability to freeze somebody in place, or even energy in place, and simultaneously extract their thoughts from them. He was able to, it wasn't just, I mean, the Jedi have always shown some sort of sense of telepathy. Obi-Wan said, your thoughts betray you. Vader said, your thoughts betray you. So there's always been some sort of, you know, a hint that the Jedi could read minds in certain situations. But he was able to go in and yank out what he wanted from somebody. So even that, I think, is a good way to sort of approach this, to be like, with when you're talking about Jedi powers and Jedi who have them and Jedi who don't, the first thing I want to throw out there to you is, do you agree with me that basically Jedi have always been given the power that's necessary for the story to move forward?
Yes, it has. And I it's funny because, you know, for me, that's not a power I hadn't heard of before with the Jedi.
Right.
Because if you had continued on with the EU, and I know a lot of people have, I think, John, you had stopped reading by this point. But in the Legacy of the Force series,
yeah,
Luke Skywalker, you know, he has this power. He confronts his nephew, who has gone to the dark side, who's become Darth Cadus, and he walks into the room, and Cadus can't move. He is glued to the chair.
Interesting.
And it was one of the coolest scenes I'd ever read, because you realize the power at that point. It was, you know, the Grand Master of Luke Skywalker had become. He could stop even his powerful nephew from doing what he wanted to do. And so when I saw that power, I thought to myself, I can tell that whoever wrote this script has had some influence by the EU in the sense that somebody from the story group may have said, yeah, that works. We've seen that before. We've had that done before. You know, when it went through the group, okay. And they're probably like, do we put that force power in there? Yeah, we've had that in the EU. That makes sense. Okay.
See, that's interesting for me because we're both in agreement. Like the Jedi have always, it's like R2's rocket thrusters in episode 2 and 3. He needed them, therefore he had them.
Yes, and, exactly.
You know, I never had a problem with that. I love the fact that R2, I mean, you know, if you really want to talk about it, R2 manifested in all of the movies. They needed to unlock a door. Well, R2 can do that. They needed to read a computer. R2 can do that. It's like he could always do what was necessary to move the plot
He's
forward.
He's like the Swiss Army knife of the Star Wars galaxy. Come on.
Right. Well, why didn't R2 use his jets before? Who says he needed them? But anyway, because I know that's a whole side conversation. But with Kylo Ren's power, what I had always sort of reconciled it with was I think that you alluded to this with Cornhorn is one, the force manifests itself. Everybody gets their own sort of specialty. They're able to be their own sort of Jedi or dark side user. So everybody has their own special skills that they bring to the table.
Yeah. Like, you know, Vader with throat hugs.
Yeah. Throat hugs. Are you sure it's not tickling? It's aggressive tickling. Maybe Vader's actually, maybe his brain got damaged when he burned on Mustafar, and he's like Lenny from Of Mice and Men, and he's just trying to hug people with the force, and it keeps going horribly wrong, and it just makes him angry because he just wants a hug.
It just reminds me of that, the MTV Music Awards, and Jimmy Fallon was doing that skit from Mustafar where he was Anakin and he's choking Padme, and then he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to turn it off, you know, the force.
Oh, nice. No, I didn't know that's cute. That's very cute. But for me, I actually had sort of thought in my head, it's entirely possible that this power had manifested itself. We just didn't see it on screen, because I'm sitting there thinking about it, and Leia very obviously gets tortured in the original film, in what is now called A New Hope. Who says Vader couldn't do what Kylo Ren was doing? Who says he wasn't freezing Leia and the droid was there to work her over if, you know, she needed extra coercion or something like that? But even more importantly, like with these Jedi powers, what are the ones, like, okay, I want to ask two questions that stem from it.
Okay.
The first one is, what do you think are the coolest? And the second one is, what do you think is the one that was the weakest or the lamest? Because there's one I have in mind for that. There's only one that jumps out at me where I'm like, I never really liked that they did that.
You know, I think the one that I feel is the coolest is the ability of the Force to make using a lightsaber something that one can do. The ability to, because what the Force allows a Jedi to do is to be able to slow down time, basically, and be able to react faster than anybody could ever react without the Force.
And that's why they're able to, right.
And the reaction time that's needed to, say, block blaster bolts and that kind of stuff. So that power, that connection with it that allows one to be able to use a lightsaber effectively as a weapon in a galaxy that is full of blasters, I think is an incredible power, because there's so many different things that work, but it really comes down to be able to, I mean, the Jedi and the lightsaber are, you know, it's like peanut butter and jelly. They go together. And
sure.
So without those two, I mean, and without the Force to guide you, a lightsaber is just a glowy sword, but it wouldn't do you much good in a land of blasters.
Well, I mean, you could probably open a door pretty quick, or
yeah,
say slice,
I mean,
open,
yeah,
a tauntaun,
you know,
to
that
save your
kind
friend's
of stuff
life.
Is, it's great, but I mean, it doesn't really work as a main weapon. It's just kind of a cool trinket at that point.
Right.
It's a really big door opener.
Yeah, but also there's the fact that the ability to see things before they happen, which is something that Qui-Gon calls out specifically as a Jedi trait, is why so many Jedi are good pilots. Which think is interesting, because does that call out a limitation on Obi-Wan's part his ability to see things before they happen, because he hates flying, right? He makes a point of talking about how much he hates flying in episode 2 and episode 3. Flying is for droids. I hate flying.
I think that what it seems like is that, you know, some Jedi kind of take joy in that. In that way of almost like being able to have a machine as their, as an extension of themselves. But Obi-Wan has never been a character throughout the films, and we talked about even in our Small Moments episode, he seems to be much more connected with living things as well. And it's, for him, I think flying is a part of life, but it's not his joy. I think his joy really comes with being connected to people and living things. And I mean, he's obviously a pretty good swordsman because he took on Anakin and won. So
yeah,
I mean,
true.
It's pretty impressive. He just,
well, see, the thing is, I always saw it as, it, you know, first and foremost, in those moments where he talks about how he hates flying, like he hates fighting is more than anything.
Yes.
Like, and every time he was in the cockpit and that was happening, is he's like, he was basically saying, like, every time I get in the cockpit, something goes wrong. I get shot at, or droids are all over me, or something. Like, I hate this.
Can we get rid of the buzz droids?
Right. But I think also there's a philosophical thing that you could read into it if you wanted to, where the first thing we ever hear Qui-Gon say to Obi-Wan when they're in a moment alone is, don't focus on the future at the expense of the moment. And so it could just be also contributed to by the fact that Obi-Wan was trained by a teacher who taught him not to focus so much on looking into the future and anticipating things, just be present. And so there you go. That's just sort of the way it
well,
is for
and
him.
To be hyper-present, you know, to not lose your surroundings, to not get so taken up by what could happen in the future that you lose the present and get taken out. You know, I mean, and I think Obi-Wan through the films definitely has this ability to be doing pretty much the right thing at the right time. Yeah. And especially after episode 1, you really see him kind of grow in that. And I think that it's an interesting power to have, this idea of being able to see into the future, because let's talk about Yoda, you know, as having the power. I mean, he's the best at being able to see the future.
Right.
But as the dark side starts to cloud everything, he loses some of that power. And I think, especially even just thinking about the latest Rebels, Yoda becomes afraid because his connection with the Force in a way that he's dealt with things is slowly
fading.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it causes a fear in him that creates an anger in him, which makes him too quick to fight and not think about what's happening.
Interesting.
And Yoda admits that in the latest episode of Rebels, and I think that's fascinating because it's the, he has taken for granted the present and not focused enough on that. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying, and like I think that the fine line in terms of Jedi powers that any Jedi has to figure out is, because Yoda also says in episode 5, you know, always in motion is the future. Like, it's always changing. It's always different, which is sort of borrowed from Frank Herbert's Dune, that there are, you know, Paul Moadib can see all of the potential futures, and it's just certain decision points that determine which branches you can go down and those sorts of things. But so it's pretty universal in terms of Jedi powers that they're all able to see to varying degrees what's going to happen in the future. I mean, like, I like to think that Yoda isn't so much paralyzed by fear, but he is able to see so many potential futures. I mean, I guess it would be fear, because he's able to see so many potential futures, he's scared of which one to go down, because he knows that at least one of them, or at least 10% of them, whatever percentage you want to give it, lead to even worse situations. And since they're already in a bad situation, there's sort of a trepidation to even using the power, which is interesting because I wonder what we're going to find out, because, of course, you know, as we're recording this, episode 8 still hasn't come out. So,
right.
We've touched on the EU a little bit, and I was still reading the EU when Children of the Force came out. And one of the things that they hit on, and I think it was in Children of the Force, was it that? It doesn't matter. somebody eventually said to Luke, or it might have been in Vision of the Future or Spectre of the Past. Yeah, I think so, because it was Mara Jade that said this, where she said, did you ever kind of think about the fact that Yoda actually stopped using his powers after a certain point? That they could become a bad thing for Jedi to rely on their powers, and you need to practice some restraint with everything. Like, yeah, you can go to a certain level, but it is not good for you to become reliant on the powers that are there, because you do get paralyzed by the idea that you can't exist without them. And so, you know, this was before everything was sort of reinvented with the prequels. So,
yeah, that's a really interesting question. And I think that I feel like that's a question that you ask as a writer when you don't necessarily, you're afraid of making your characters right. so overpowered that you're trying to find a way to rein them in.
Okay.
So I think that's where that question stems from, more than it actually being a legitimate question for the Star Wars
universe.
That's
fair enough.
I'm wondering, though, before we get to the one I didn't like, I'm kind of wondering what the Force power is for you that really stood out, that's just kind of your favorite.
You know, it's very easy to go for mind trick, but that's sort of like when we were talking about the small moments where it's like, you know, J.J. Abrams loves the double sunsets. Like, yeah, everybody loves that one. You know, I would say that probably the Force power that I like the best, that I would actually want, would be the ability to speak to animals, like communicate with them. Like, I actually like that, because it's not just Ezra and it's not just Obi-Wan, but in the arena scene in episode 2, Anakin is able to calm and tame and ride a wild beast by walking up to it and reaching out to it and establishing a trust.
Yeah.
Like, how cool would it be to know that you could go out into the wilderness and say, I'm for some reason hiking through Alaska, and a grizzly bear comes up, and to know that you're able to calm yourself and reach out and at least give an impression to that grizzly bear to be like, we're cool. Let's be okay here.
And let me ride you.
Yeah. Oh, man. Can you imagine riding in on a grizzly bear with your lightsaber? That would be so cool.
Oh, my gosh. That is an awesome idea right there. I'd love it.
I'd love to see Teddy Roosevelt on a grizzly bear with a lightsaber. That would be the best painting ever.
Unstoppable.
Yes.
Unstoppable.
Give me an army of that. I'll conquer any nation on earth. Absolutely.
Talk about carrying a big stick.
That's right.
Gosh.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's get to it. Your least favorite Force power that you saw displayed.
That's hard.
Sure it is. I mean, because the thing is, all of their powers have always been in service of the story. But there's one that's always stuck out to me as, like, this one just felt forced.
You know, I think the Force power, and it's hard, too, because I feel like the films, the Force powers are all kind of necessary for the storyline.
Sure.
I feel like it's in the EU where the Force powers are just like, really? You know, like,
sure.
One of them that sticks out for me was the idea of being able to create like a force bubble, force field around yourself. I was almost like, that's taking it a little far.
Wait, so you were able to create like an actual force field, like a Droidica creates
like that. Just that kind of took it a little bit
that
too far.
That is kind of crazy. But that's that had to be like Luke's, like, apex, or was that just a student who had that?
I mean, it's been so long, so I've read so many of those older EU books, but I just remember that being a thing, and it was just, you know, there were things like that where they would pull out this new power or just an upgraded power, just it was just too much, you know. I mean, all the main powers, like running and jumping and force push and force pull and,
yeah,
you know, all that stuff, I mean, that's par for the course, but, you know, when you start doing that, it's just like, okay, now you are starting to make people that are completely overpowered.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, I remember there was an EU book back when I was still reading it, and I can't remember which one it was thankfully, I think, because I think it was a book I didn't particularly like, but it was back before Coruscant was established as a complete city planet, and they still had like that one mountain. And remember when the topography of Coruscant included a mountain?
Yep, I remember
and
that.
A beach
yep.
and one ocean and everything like that. Luke built a castle out of the sand.
Oh, gosh.
You don't even remember this, do you?
I don't remember
and
that.
And Han went to go visit him, and he didn't have the impression. Like, it was so weird. Like, Luke had this big dream castle that, like, Han walked into, and, like, the sand changed around him to take him somewhere. And it was like, that was the point at which I think I really started falling out of love with
all
the EU stuff. Because I was like, this is just too far, guys.
That is awful.
Yeah, it was nuts.
That is awful.
But in terms of on screen, the, I guess, super speed from the beginning of episode one.
I knew you were going to say that.
It bothers me. It
really?
Still
Why?
Bothers me. The Blu-ray, it doesn't bother me as much because it doesn't look like super speed so much as there's like this almost obfuscation thing mm-hmm. to it. Like where they're sort of like creating almost like a cloak so that the droids can't quite figure out. And yeah, they move super fast, but then when you see them on the view screen, it's like they dart really fast out of the way, but then they're running normal speed afterward now on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And it's always bothered me because if super speed was an option, there are so many different points in the story yeah. where super speed would have saved somebody, would have, for instance, saved Qui-Gon at the end of episode one.
Yeah.
Would have saved, would have saved Anakin.
I do think, though, when you look at that, you know, when you put two Jedi together, they're both going at super speed. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're counseling each other out. So, you know, Qui-Gon fighting Darth Maul at that point, they're both going really fast. It's not that one is, you know what I'm saying? Like, right there in that scene in episode one, they're against droids who are definitely, there's no way they can keep up with two Jedi in their prime.
Okay.
And so if they want to move really fast, they can move really fast. But, you know, when you're fighting somebody else, it's like when Superman fights somebody who is just as fast as he is. You know, okay. They cancel each other out. Whereas, you know, you watch the Flash fight a normal person. I mean, there's just no contest.
So you would be sort of approaching it from the idea that they're actually fighting at that speed when it's them against them, but they slowed the film down so we could keep up with it.
Pretty much. I mean, just think about this. And there's a criticism that happens for a lot of people with the fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan in episode three, that it's too polished and it's too fast. But I think that is the fight that's showing you exactly what it looks like for two prime force users who know each other really well to fight each other. And it's happening at a lightning speed. There's no stopping. And that fight, they are flying through that fight. So I think you're really seeing what it's like when two actual Jedi who are in their prime are going at it.
I reject the idea that they're fighting at super speed at the end of episode one. I've always tried to reason it out that the super speed thing is something where you need two Jedi working in conjunction to sort of assist each other. Like they have to have a link, because obviously Jedi who fight together or have a bond can do certain things that a single Jedi can't do. There is a collectiveness to the power that is there. Like Kanan and Ezra focusing together opens the temple on Lothal, or everybody meditating together produces a different result than a single person meditating together. So I've always sort of backdoor reasoned it as Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are able to work in conjunction the same way that Obi-Wan and Anakin, when they're flying at the beginning of episode three, when they fly over the Star Destroyer and spin around and their thrusters go off at the same time, they're just working that well. They're that in sync that they can flow off of each other, and their powers sort of amplify each other when they're in that moment.
Okay. Yeah. It makes sense too, because that kind of connects with, you know, on the 602 Club, we had covered the Thrawn trilogy, the original one by Zahn, and the battle meld, to which, you know, Jor Sabath is being used by Thrawn to help with the Empire at that point, because Thrawn actually realizes that one of the things that had made the Empire successful was the Emperor's power. And through the dark side of actually influencing his troops to help them in different battles. And so I think that actually has some legitimacy to it. And we see that, you know, I mean, it makes complete sense with canon. And so I like it. I mean, I'll buy it.
Okay, so let me ask then. And just in case anybody isn't familiar with what we're talking about, there was put forth in the first three expanded universe books that were ever released in the early 1990s, commonly referred to as the Thrawn Trilogy, set 5 years after Return of the Jedi. You have Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and The Last Command. And what you find out is that the Emperor was able to exert this battle coordination power. He basically reached out with the Force and was able to make his Imperial Navy and Army fight more in tune. And so the reasoning is that he lost his focus and died, and that's why the Imperial fleet falls apart at the end of Return of the Jedi, is they were reliant on the Emperor's will to sort of keep them moving along. I have always had a problem with that. So if we're going to go to expanded universe, giant morphing sandcastle is still going to win in terms of force powers I didn't like. But
well,
I've never been a big fan of the battle meld. I just haven't. I mean, well, I could see Jedi working together that way, but I can't reconcile the idea that the Empire to function needed the Emperor exerting his will all throughout the entire galaxy. I mean, that's power on a scale that's just unimaginable.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It is kind of hard to swallow. And it's interesting, too, because in that book, Mara Jade has lost a lot of her prowess because the Emperor's gone and
right.
he was helping her. Instead of actually really training her, she has some natural force abilities, but he seemed to be somebody who is enhancing them by his presence,
right,
helping her out. And so what was interesting then about her growth is that she begins to have to learn herself how to use the Force without being reliant on the power of another. So that was an interesting thing there as well. It's almost as if the Emperor's hands were indentured servants to the Force of the Emperor, because he didn't want somebody being too powerful, because he didn't want somebody challenging him. And so I think that made for a really interesting thing with a character who became beloved by fans everywhere. I mean, Mara Jade is beloved by both you and I still. She was turned out to be such a fantastic character.
And technically the first character to have a purple lightsaber. Sorry, Mace.
That is true. And the one who won Luke Skywalker's heart. So
possibly played by Laura Dern in episode 8. Who knows?
That would be pretty sweet if she was Mara Jade.
It won't happen.
Yeah.
My money's on her playing Winter. But
well,
that's
I think
just
that's
me.
Probably the biggest middle finger to George is if you put Mara Jade in is somewhere in canon like that, because he hated Mara Jade. So,
oh, he did?
Yeah,
I never knew
like
that.
Mara Jade. So.
Oh. Interesting. Well, okay. So in terms of the Force powers, though, obviously Luke is in hiding in episode 7. So this is the question I want to ask, is the Sith are able to exist, you know, flying under the radar for a very long time, where the Jedi can't tell. You know, they're taken by surprise in episode 1.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that it is a Force power to be able to mask yourself? Because I'll go back to the films. Episode 2, Obi-Wan sneaking around. There's the big debate. Did Dooku know he was there and wanted him to go and broadcast some information to do what would have inevitably start the war? Because as soon as he sends the broadcast, all of the gears of war start moving, which is the whole goal of the Sith. Or was Obi-Wan using some sort of power to mask himself so that any potential Force users wouldn't be able to tell that he was there?
Well, when you ask that question, I immediately think of the EU, and that is a power throughout the EU, is to be able to mask yourself in the Force. And obviously it has to be, because Palpatine was doing it. right in front of, I mean, he's got Yoda sitting right in front of him. He has to be able to mask his power so that they don't know who he is.
But is it possible that the, okay, because I've always gone sort of with, like, I don't know whether radar or sonar is better, but the Jedi, if they're not, it seems to me the Jedi or the Sith, if they're not actively seeking out, like, they don't suspect Palpatine. So they're not, like, turning on their force sensory powers around him. And so...
Okay, let me put it this way. Yoda is the most powerful Jedi in the galaxy at that point.
Sure. Yes. I accept
that. If you're
that.
Another force user, you're gonna feel him near you because he's just so powerful. Now, the thing has to be the same for Palpatine. Palpatine is the most powerful dark side user. He is the most powerful Sith in the galaxy at this point. Unless he is actively suppressing some of that or masking it with the dark side so that they can't tell because of the power of the dark side growing, then they would know exactly who he is when they walked into the office. They'd be like, oh, it's you. You're under arrest.
Let me throw this idea out there. Is it possible that the Jedi can't sense somebody else who's a force user unless they're actively using the force? Because if there's the ability to mask your ability, then why was Vader able to sniff out Obi-Wan on the Death Star? Because he says, I sense something, a presence I haven't felt since. So he's able to sense Obi-Wan, and it's highly unlikely that Obi-Wan is sitting in the Falcon using the force in any way. Mm-hmm. So what is the trigger? Because it seems inconsistent.
Well, is Obi-Wan not maybe trying to do that on purpose, though, to draw away Vader's attention? Because it seems pretty clear that Obi-Wan at that point is looking for the showdown.
So but does he expect to find Vader on there?
My guess is that Vader's not hiding his presence in the Force on the Death Star, and I'm pretty sure that Obi-Wan can feel it.
Is it possible with what we know now that Obi-Wan was expecting like an Inquisitor there at most? Like they're like when they show up, it's a surprise that they've found this, you know, that's no moon, that's a space station.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe this thing, it's a giant machine. And they get there. Is it possible that Vader senses Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan goes from not using anything and he's doing this sort of like feeler where he's kind of like, mm-hmm. is there an Inquisitor on here? What's going on? And then he accidentally like brushes Vader
right.
and then shuts it down real quick. And is like, oh, well, I hope he didn't sense that.
I'll go straight to episode 6 where remember when they're on the Tyderium
yeah.
and Luke's like, I'm endangering the mission. I shouldn't have come. Why?
Yeah.
Vader's on that ship. There are a lot of command ships out there,
right.
Luke.
Right.
Okay. Chewie, keep your distance. Just don't look like you're trying to keep your... I mean, so yeah, that it seems like unless you're actively suppressing yourself in the Force or not paying attention, like say, take episode 2. Dooku is in the middle of negotiations with the rest of the Separatist leaders.
Yeah.
He may be aware that Obi-Wan is there because... Not because he felt him in the Force... But because he got word from Palpatine that Obi-Wan is on the trail.
Okay.
Which makes more
sense. Although Jango believes that he's destroyed Obi-Wan at that point.
True, but I think at that point too, Dooku would be suspicious. He would probably have people on the lookout. He knows it's much harder to kill a Jedi than that. So, and Obi-Wan has a teacher that which he's very familiar with. Qui-Gon.
So is it possible that it has to do with an emotional bond? For instance, it's harder for them to sense Palpatine because Palpatine is a foreign entity to all of them. Whereas, like Obi-Wan and Vader / Anakin, they're a close bond. Luke and Vader, it's father and son. And they're, you know, he's just going to sense him right off the bat. Although at that point, Luke still knows that Leia is his sister. And because one of the big things as well, of course, that everybody likes to harp on is why didn't Vader sense it was Leia? And of course, you know, yes, the story changes over blah, blah, blah. But like I've always reasoned it out as that she was not even aware that she could use the Force. So there's no active tapping of it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, no, I actually completely agree on that sentiment that it's just that Leia has no idea that she's Force sensitive. And so anything that she has been able to ever do that is just part of her personality and just who she is. So I do think, though, to me, I think it comes down to the fact that you can and have to believe that the power of the Force can be suppressed in a person, so you can't know that they're a Jedi. And I think Palpatine's the best argument for it. And that I like your argument that it's family and very strong connection, which makes that much more difficult to be able to fool anyone or not let that shine through, because emotion is a part
sure.
of it.
Sure.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's a great question. I'm really interested to see, you know, what the listeners think, too, because, you know, when we start to talk about some of these things, it can go any way. You know, I mean, for me, it's easy to believe in the suppression of the Force like that because I'm so used to it being able to happen on and in the EU. And it was pretty important for some of those things to which they did, because they were sneaking into places and they were actually almost able to make themselves kind of invisible, which was kind of a neat harnessing of the Force, I thought, as well. So, just fun extrapolation on what you had at that point, and now we've got a whole new set of Force powers starting to unveil themselves with, the newest Episode 7, and it'll be interesting to see what we do and who Luke is, because, hey, Daisy Ridley just came out and said that Luke's got some really cool stuff to do in Episode 8. So I don't know what that means, but it sounds awesome to me, and I'm ready to see, you know, the Jedi Master at work.
I'm hoping to see him fix breakfast using the Force, because that would be so cool if he could just Force levitate some eggs. Imagine how clean and neat and tidy it would be to make waffles in the morning if you had the Force.
It would make Master Obi-Wan so grumpy, too.
Well, wait a minute. Would there be like a dividing line for Obi-Wan where it was like, don't show off by cutting the pear in the air, but yeah, if you want to make some eggs and you don't want to get stuff all over the counter, yeah, that's all right. Go ahead.
I think it's a great idea. I really don't want eggs all over the counter. So,
yeah. It makes sense to me.
Go for it.
Well, like you said, it would be great to actually hear from the listeners. So if you have some thoughts about Force powers that you want to reach out to us and you want to, you know, contribute some thoughts, one of the ways you can reach out to us is on Twitter. We're at the Jedi Masters, TJ and M are capitalized, and go ahead and let us know what you think about, because I think that the sensing other Force users thing is a debate that could go on for the ages. Give us your thoughts
Definitely.
On that or something else you wish you could have seen from the Jedi.
Well, and two, if you'd like to email us, you can do that at an@thenerdparty.com, which is a great way. We'd love to get an email from you. And of course, too, John, if you want to find us online, just head over to thenerdparty.com.
That's where you can find us, absolutely. You can also find us on Facebook over at facebook.com/aggressive negotiations. We are part of the Nerd Party Network, but we're there and we're active. We actually... we'd love to hear from you there, especially about the new release, the upcoming release of the Star Wars Force Awakens Blu-ray.
Oh, man, Force Awakens Blu-ray. We've got Rebels talk going on because we've had some great episodes recently, and we're coming down to the wire with that. So definitely join us over there because, man, I can't get enough Star Wars talk, John, and I know you can't. But you also talk about some other things, and you're some places online. So let everybody know where they can find you before we decide to end these negotiations.
Oh, thank you, Matthew. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. You can find me on the Trek FM network as part of Commentary Trek Stars right now with Mike Schindler. And you can find me with my buddy Craig over at a podcast called Words with Nerds, where we talk about a whole range of things. We just recently spoke about why is it that Spider-Man never landed on broken glass or a syringe when he's swinging around New York? And I think it's a valid question. But where can people find you, Matthew?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushingHis02. I'm also on the Trek FM network, where I am one of the co-hosts of The Orb, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. I'm also one of the co-hosts of Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also interview the authors. I am also on a show there called The 602 Club, which is the general geek show there on Trek FM. We talk about all things geeky, not Star Trek, and some of that does include Star Wars. We actually have a special Star Wars feed, and my master friend John here actually is on most of those episodes, so I hope you'll check that out. And gosh, John, I think that's the only, well, yeah, those are the places you can find me. I get confused sometimes. I'm too many places these days.
Well, gosh. I would say also, if somebody were to turn on the bat signal, you'll show up with glowing red eyes.
Yes, I will. I will do that.
To answer the question whether you bleed.
I don't. So wait till you find that out. Well, John, I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.